Hello, this is Patrick from The Fundamental Principle. We're going to be starting Chapter 4 of Catholic and Identitarian today. I hope you guys are enjoying it so far, at least learning some things. But we'll start with a prayer and get right into it. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Soul of Christ, sanctify us. Body of Christ, save us. Blood of Christ, inebriate us. Water from Christ's side, wash us. Passion of Christ, strengthen us. O good Jesus, hear us. Within thy wounds, hide us. Suffer us not to be separated from thee. Amen. What to do? Identitarian ecology and the rights to have roots. Migrant is a word trap that should be banished. After the term undocumented fell out of use, the word migrant became the new somatic weapon to make us accept immigration as an inevitable phenomenon. You escort an illegal alien right back to the border by a migrant, you welcome. Given in the air of scientific objectivity, the word is a trap. So now there is a right to immigrate, there's a right to sex change or an abortion. They don't want us to make us passively acquiesce to the new fundamental freedom. But even more than they want us to approve of the population flows that are destabilizing the world. According to the model of international nomad, immigration is not only but a simple right, but an encouraged regular occurrence. Migratory displacement is thus presented as a norm in sedentary civilization, as a historical parentheses ending with globalization. We can take abortion with a parallel case, the claims plastered about by media campaigns showing us something. It is not about defending a right, but rather encouraging a practice while denying any alternative. It is the same thing with immigration, conceived as an objective blessing. However, history shows us that immigration is first and foremost a human tragedy. Immigration is a tragedy. The history of immigration is that of a refugee, Armenians, Rwandans, and many other victims of famine, like the Irish in the middle of the 19th century, or political persecution and ethnic cleansing, Ukrainians, Poles, White Russians. No one leaves his country lightheartedly. Immigration is a personal, no one of high morality, I would say, leaves his country lightheartedly. Immigration is a personal and collective tragedy that wounds several nations at once, cutting off from one to make trouble in another. Monsignor Schneider said, quote, "To move large masses of people out of their homeland means tearing a living organism out of its natural soil, out of its tradition, and out of its national history," unquote. Consequently, the response to this tragedy of uprooting people cannot take the form of denying the identity of immigrants, just as denying the seriousness of abortion will not help the mother who carried it out to overcome her trauma. Denying reality is never a solution. The real question are whether immigration is truly justified, but whether the impact of immigration or the national common good is a positive or negative. The priority of the right to live in one's homeland. The dawn of the immigrant crisis, the later part of 2012, Pope Benedict XVI took to the floor to remind us that some common sense. Quote, "In the current socio-political context, we must reaffirm the right not to immigrate, that is, to be able to stay in one's homeland," unquote. It is rooted in the first human right of man, since it is natural extension of the right to life, to be rooted in a man's right to lead his development on the land which Providence elected him for. To be deprived of his freedom by war, oppression, and cowardice of host countries whose government have no courage but to abandon their own borders is a profound evil. However, evil will destroy the root. It is the etymological meaning of the word radical. This is why one mustn't fear being a radical and claiming to be such. Pope John Paul II said that it is, as his successor, the, quote, promoted right of man is to live in his homeland, unquote. But this is right, quote, only becomes effective if you get the factors of driving immigration under control, unquote. The main factor, according to the Holy parlance, is the search for a better life. But this motivation is really justified. Be careful. We're now entering a minefield. They did not flee misery. In our childish, narcissistic society, whoever suffers is necessarily right. The call to victimhood has replaced that of heroes. They give posthumous decorations of victims of attack and ignore the exploits of soldiers. Therefore, to question the migrant sacrosanct desire for wealth is an unforgivable crime, an intolerant infringement on his ego. In fact, of such an attack, the historical retorts such a pouring out. Who are you to judge? Who are you? You know where he comes from, right? Not really. That's true. But so much the better, because it's better to keep some distance in order to judge such a difficult situation. Being emotionally involved in the situation rarely lends itself to be lucid. Let's ask the hard questions. Maybe the Moroccan who left the village of his ancestors to wind up on the assembly line Renault factory in France, whose son became a drug dealer before finding refuge in the Salafism. Is he happier here in France than back in Morocco, where there are fewer comforts, but life was more stable and coherent? For some who find themselves in the situation for good or for ill, how many are uprooted, frustrated, and hateful? How many ruin their lives and that of their own family? The Iraqi living in the jungles of Kalthis, the giant slum where crooks, prostitutes, and potential terrorists are crowded together, has flourished as the infamous hell more than his own country, a place touched by war where the solid communities still remain. Nothing could be less certain. And then if immigration is an opportunity for France, why are immigrants not an opportunity for their country of origin? The African American and sub-Africans who have been coming to Europe for 40 years were not fleeing totalitarianism or famine. The majority of them were not wandering the streets looking for a piece of bread. They had work and lived properly in relative peaceful societies. Maybe these people are not well off as our citizens, at last to our consumer standards, but they were not starving or naked. In reality, they were dreaming of comfort and covered in modernity. What they want was superfluous shiny objects. In summary, they were poor, but not destitute. The European man, sedated with artificial pleasures and low-cost luxuries, has forgotten the timeless distinction. Against misery, long live poverty. According to Pope Francis, quote, the misery is poverty, and without confidence, without solidarity, and without hope. You can be materially rich, live in a moral or even spiritual misery, and making yourself a slave to vice and sin. Jean Bessire, a persecutor of Christian ecology, defines misery as a lack of goods that are indispensable for life. Poverty expresses the mastery over these goods and over what one expects from them. Therefore, poverty is exactly opposite of misery. Misery oppresses and poverty liberates. The freedom is voluntary simplicity, a freedom, a fundamental evangelical principle. Quote, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious for your life, and that you shall eat, or what you shall drink, or about your body that you shall put on. It is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Unquote, says Christ, Matthew 6, verses 25. All Christian tradition is watered with the spirit of liberation through shedding unnecessary attachment, recalling the warning for the prophet Zaya, quote, one of those who joined house to house, who had field to field, until there's no room and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land, unquote. Isaiah 5:8, or St. Paul, who said to Timothy, quote, for the love of money is the root of all evils, unquote. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 10, but even in the heart of a Catholic world, the sole response to immigration is to opt-in a material approach, which aims to satisfy as measly the thirst for wealth in poor countries, perceiving these through the Western mirage. But man lives not by bread alone, but by smartphones, and anyway, illegal migrants have plenty of smartphones, for not only does the argument of misery reveal a certain intellectual confusion, but it doesn't even correspond to reality. Fake refugees, the true economic migrants, the majority of illegal migrants who get into Europe belong to the middle class, if not the well-to-do class of their country. Making the journey to Europe is costly, and traffickers charge a lot, from 800 euro to 8,000 euro on average. This doesn't even take in consideration the various options. 200 USD for a covering, 100 USD for a seat. The traffickers are making a killing off migratory laxity, and the human trafficking is the second highest source of illicit profit in the world. I didn't realize that these numbers were that high. I can see why internationalists have been doing it for thousands of years. Supporters of unconditional migration are the useful idiots of organized crime. I don't know if they're useful idiots of organized crime, or they're just getting a cut of it. I'm sure maybe some like libtards are we're bringing them in. But I think the people that run these NGOs are definitely getting a cut. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Quote, these are not uprooted peasants who are wandering, unquote. Warns researcher Patrick Simon, quote, in Syria and Iraq, there are ones who have the most resources, engineers and teachers and technicians, unquote. This is corroborated by a man on the ground, Mark Formage, director of aid to the Church of Distress, a papal initiative active in 145 countries. Quote, among migrants, most are fleeing poverty or trying their luck in the European El Dorado, unquote. The UN itself says that fewer than 3% of migrants have crossed the Mediterranean in 2016 were true refugees, and predictably some of them returned to their country, like an Iraqi who admitted to having taken advantage of the crisis in the Middle East to go to Europe, disappointed by the lack of actual opportunities or the food is in the welcoming centers. He still prefers Iraq, where Fissel says, quote, I am not a danger, unquote. Even Syrians consider going back home, like the invaders, by liberation. Quote, people think that when you get to Europe, it's going to be great. Even under the bombings in Syria, it was better, unquote. That says a lot. That truly the people here are extremely despicable.
Fight rather than flee. Of course, there are real causes of distress, like the Vietnamese fleeing communism in the 1970s. However, remember that some of these refuse to flee and prefer to stay and fight, like the Christians of Syria, mothers and daughters side by side confronting ISIS. Lucia, 20 years old, explaining her choice. This is not a place for a young woman, but I have no choice. But I had no choice. It was either flee to Europe or fight for my family and my community. This was also the case of Shaun Warda, an old Christian soldier who jealously guards the ruins of the church in Tel Nasser, which was blown up by jihadists before they fled. I will leave here. I will leave here. I will not leave here. This is my land. Encouraging, publicizing, and supporting these fighters should come before enticing them to abandon their country to assassins. That would be a strong sign, choosing political courage instead of the politics of the ostrich. Since the vast majority of illegal immigrants who flock to Europe are young men in good health, why don't they go fight their ISIS? Why do they not defend their land? They're not ready to risk their lives for their own country, and yet some would have us believe they become good Frenchmen? Since when did courage cease to be a virtue taught by the church? At what time in Christian history has fleeing become preferable to martyrdom? A biblical message about refugees.
I do want to make a real quick, for the Americans leaving for Europe or anywhere else, Latin America, or you know, just because of our economic issues, your grandkids aren't going to look like you or be anything. Even if you move to Russia, they're not going to act like you. They're not going to act like Americans because they're not going to be Americans. Like they're not going to. The only thing you're going to see with them is your genetics, and that can only go so far. They're just going to be completely different.
They'll be the weird kids with the American grandpa.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is a little bit, and it's in American context when we had so many waves of immigrants, it's a little bit different. But it's like if you live in, you know, rural Russia, like they've never met American. They're going to be the odd ones out.
That's the way it should be, right? Like if you leave your country, leave your home to go be a passport bro, right? And go to
Ukraine,
wherever, Hungary, wherever. And because like the women there are trad, and somehow you land a laptop job and you meet, you know, a Hungarian girl, right? And you marry her. And even if you're like part Hungarian as an American and you go back to the old country because that's where you wanted to go, your kids like are going to grow up speaking Magyar, not English, which is like you're going to have a hell of a time learning Hungarian, which is very, very difficult, or Finnish or whatever it is, or French. America's terrible at learning languages. Right. And your kids are not going to be like you, and your grandkids aren't going to be like you at all. And your great grandkids are going to be like, oh yeah, I think my great grandpa was an American.
Yeah. And it's all of what your family sacrificed to come here or build ties here, or it's just going to be washed away.
Yeah. And to the book's point, right? Like, and the Holy Father Leo just talked about this, like, why are all these people leaving their homes? You know, the Boer refugees that we're recording this in, you know, May 18th, 2025, right? The Boer refugees just came to America, like 60 of them, which God be praised, that's not enough. There needs to be tens of thousands of those that are in danger or in poverty or whatever, right? They came here with like everything on their backs, like everything they own in a few suitcases, with their whole families and like dads who were obviously like tired and worried, and moms who were, you know, holding it together for the kids, just grateful to be here. Why are all these single young men showing up in our countries, like that are healthy and in good shape? Why is this a thing? Where are their wives? They're, you know, if they're really refugees, right? Where are the women and kids?
Yeah.
Where are the old folks? And, if these guys are such brave, tough guys, why aren't they fighting for their homes?
Good question.
So to justify the biblical message about refugees, to justify the laxity on migration, some take Jewish history as a model, invoking the Old Testament and the suffering of the Hebrews in exile, or the flight of the Holy Family into Egypt. They derive an argument from this to defend the virtue of hospitality in all circumstances. This cheap exegesis is done in bad faith. It forgets the Hebrews then returned home and did not lose sight of a land they had been promised to them despite the reluctance of many. Genesis says, quote, on the day of the Lord made a on the day the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, or with Abram, saying, to your descendants I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, Genesis 15:18. Seeing the beauty of the lands of the Nile in the spring, Moses said, brothers, let us remake our life here in the shade of the palm tree. Certainly your chains are heavy, but what glory is there in being born here or there? Israel is behind us, and humanity is the same wherever you go. We are the ones who built Egypt. There is no such thing as an Egyptian race. The nations are hotels, and we are all the children of diversity. Of course, the whole Old Testament is marked by this nostalgia for the promised land. That land, quote, that land which flows with milk and honey, unquote. As for the flight of the Holy Family into Egypt, it concludes with their return to Israel after the angel of the Lord appeared to St. Joseph, quote, rise, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead, unquote. In the Bible, hospitality is only temporary. It is a lesser evil to endure while awaiting the return home. The one and only way out of a crisis for the Hebrew people. And also, like, the Holy Family went from the Roman province of Judea to the Roman province of Egyptus. It's no different than the people who left New York to Florida because the COVID rules were better.
Yeah.
I mean, not to just, you know, like the holy
shade towards our Florida listeners.
Right. Or, you know, like, and obviously there was, you know, Herod was demonically inspired and the Holy Innocents, the first martyrs, and like, obviously the stakes were much more serious, but in terms of like legality speaking, right. And there, it was very difficult for the Holy Family and they were poor and, you know, but this notion that like somehow like the Holy Family were these refugees who were just seeking a better, you know, like they're the same thing as these economic migrants who come to white countries seeking, you know, free stuff. Like there was no welfare in those days. There was no public services. There was no free hotels. There was no anything like that. So it's cheap and disgusting to compare what the Holy Family went through to, you know, these modern entitled non-whites who come to white countries. It's ridiculous. No charity without truth. Devoid of truth, love turns into sentimentalism. Pope Benedict XVI reminds us that, like, quote, like an empty shell that risks being arbitrarily filled, unquote, by false generosity, any false generosity. This perverted charity is, first of all, laziness and abandonment of the yields to any claim because of a pathological fear of conflict, an illness of the demasculinized European man who can no longer say yes or no. He keeps quiet and doesn't get involved. It is the politics of the rat who plays dead at floating in the water. This has nothing to do with authentic charity, which is an active virtue, the implementation of a firm and unbending willingness to be guided by the truth. The exercise of charity is to act for the good of another in view of the uncommon good in defiance of one's own personal willingness. If peace is at stake, if peace is at stake, the church has acted this way with people throughout all her history, wielding the carrot and the stick for good of all, like a mother. True freedom is guided by goodness. We poorly understand the way seeing things because we have lost the true meaning of the things beginning with the notion of freedom, which has been completely perverted by the modern selfishness. Authentic freedom is not the right to surrender one's desire in the name of moral relativism. My body, my choice. Imagine a motorist preferring to drive in the ravine because that's more exciting than staying on the road, or an illegal immigrant claiming the imaginary right to eat something other than pasta. That actually happens as a welcome citizen in Italy. Despite the influence of liberal thinking, which advocates for the freedom to do as we wish, as long as we do not infringe on our neighbor's freedom, our European societies continue to implicitly recognize values higher than individual liberty. For example, people attempting suicide will find firefighters and policemen attempting to stop them from jumping off the roof of a building, because society is not a business transaction any more than it is a simple registration box for individual morals. It is a living body which, with a head to guide the whole towards an objective good. That is why the freedom of a legal agreement cannot be, quote, a right of greater importance than a nation's interest, for a nation too is composed of human beings who have a right to life, a right that is worthless without security, that is to say, without borders. True freedom leads towards the good, which in turn renders more freedom to the degree that it is sought out. This is true for peoples as well. We are created for good, which is the realization of our nature as desired by God. We are not created for diversity or any unnatural ideology. That last section is a pretty good distillation of like, liberalism cannot admit that there's such a thing as the common good, and that such a thing exists outside of individuals or what they want. And then the goal of politics is to promote the common good without destroying individuals to the greatest extent possible. Like, occasionally it's necessary to go to war, and individual men are going to die, and they're going to surrender their liberty for that war. But sometimes that war might be necessary. Right? But the common good demands that war.
Absolutely. And it's, I don't think we're going to see the, like, I'm always watching the Ring Saga. I think it's a really important work, especially for modern context, because it's like the removal of the gold from the river. I think E. Michael Jones makes this point in his book Barren Metal. But it's the removing of the gold from the river is a representation of like the Rothschilds removing agape from Europe
by Napoleon, yeah.
Yeah. By adding usury. You know, if once we can start making seeing people as like cash cows or that only to be exploited for our own personal gain, we can't have common good.
Right.
I think that's it's a really important work. All four are really good, but I think the first one really is a good selling point of like this the whole line of like Woden lying to the giants and trying to trick them, and the whole removing of the gold, or they cause wars over this material gain.
Well, and what? Right, because we don't have the common good in mind, or like what is an American anyway, right? Like, what have all of our wars, like your entire life, right? You know, been about? Like, were they about the common good? No, they were all like for Israel, right? Like, or just against Slavs. I mean, because you know, you're a '90s kid. And so, yeah, we bombed Serbia because
they wanted to have their own way of life.
Right. Yeah. Because they weren't liberal and we bombed.
No gays.
Right. We bombed Iraq because, you know, they were a problem for Israel. And we bombed, you know, Afghanistan. Like, we just bombed we killed a bunch of Muslims because they stood in the way of Israel. Like, what common good was reached there? Like, I'll never forget it. One of the first things that like made me end up here was a bunch of Middle Eastern Christians in Texas, like real genuine Middle Eastern Christians, Chaldeans and Maronites and people in communion and out of communion with the Catholic Church, like went to Ted Cruz and were like, "You're killing our families." And he just said, "Well, folks, if you can't stand with Israel, I can't stand with you." And I was like, what the hell? Literally, like, what the hell? Like, this is from the pit. Like, these people wanted to be, you know, they were under persecution by the Muslims. Like, if you were a real, like, you know, this was back in the Tea Party days. Like, if, you know, you were really this, like, Christian constitutionalist who believed in spreading Christianity. Or, like, all the worst things that the people said about him in the Tea Party days. Like, if you really were all those things, right, you know, Christian takeover America, you'd be like, hell yeah, we're gonna send you back to Iraq with Bibles and M16s, right? and Apache helicopters. Like, you're gonna defend your Bible with your M16 and your A10, right? Like, you're gonna be free to be a Christian in the Middle East, and any Muslim that messes with you is gonna get it, right?
That's real Christo fascism,
right? Yeah, you know. If that's what, right?
Yeah.
That's supposedly what this guy's pushing, but of course he wasn't. He's a toady of Israel. I don't know why, but I mean, I could speculate, but I don't know particularly why.
So, I mean, that really kind of stands out. It's like, that's why, you know, are people like Massey, Senator Massey, are so important.
Congressman, but yeah.
Congressman Massey. Apologies. You know, people are willing to tell the truth, regardless of what happens to them.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why this book is so important, because like all of the leftist arguments are just not true.